How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I can't complain. Life is good. Life is good.
Yeah.
How about you? What's new?
What's new?
Lots of new things.
Yeah, that's the thing with there's always something new going on. Something always right on around the horizon. Oh, you know man. how the contract studios work. So we've always got something brewing. We got a really good one that I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
Which we're like days away from finding out if we landed. I can't say what it is, but it's like.
It's excellent. I just realized I didn't update the screen here with your name and everything. So I got to do that live while we're talking here. And I got to update your credits here real quick. And yeah, dude, that's exciting times though, right? When you're like trying to figure out if that new thing is coming and if what it's going to be like when it gets there. And
yep.
Oh, that's exciting times.
And it's one of those that's like a perfect, it's an opportunity for us to grow. We're perfectly suited for it. And it's also a great like strategic move for the future on several fronts. So it's like, it'll be a good one.
That's great. That's awesome to hear. I really hope that works out well for you.
I hope so too.
We got a long road to talk about before you got there.
Yeah. And sorry, I'm like spending time on something that I can only speak about abstractly.
So right.
We can move on from that one.
Yeah. See, but the nice thing is later you can come back and tell us about it when you can. So that's a good reason to come back. Cool.
And I'll explain exactly why all those things I said were true.
Right.
Or not. That'd be even more interesting.
Well, that could be too. Yeah. Hopefully we don't come back and you're telling us about why it didn't work out, you know? Man, I'm really excited to do this. We've been trying to do this for months, and then either one of us or the other would need to reschedule. And then I'm glad we're finally getting it done. Cause I think literally we started talking like 3 months ago, trying to find a time.
I think it was more than 3 months.
Yeah. I think you were scheduled 3 months ago, and then we,
yeah, exactly.
What are you going to do? But the important thing is you're here now, and
I'm here.
We're going to have a great conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I love the Barley and Luna cam. It's my favorite.
Yeah, Luna decided she wanted to hang with Mom tonight, but Barley is always in here. He's my buddy.
Yeah.
Aren't you, bub?
I've got my dogs hanging out at my feet. Not right now, but they have been for the last few days because it's been raining and thundering, and they get all nervous.
Same. Yeah, this one too. They don't like it. They don't like the elements much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We say we get this thing rolling.
Yeah, let's do it.
So why don't you tell us?
Sorry, real quick. Shout out. I see Roman in the chat. What's up, dude?
Yeah, you got a few friends in the chat excited to see you. It's good. Yeah. It's good. You got to bring an audience, man.
That's right.
Bring your own audience. No, it's good. So why don't we start with, tell us where you grew up. And like what you thought you were going to do when you first, you know, as you were growing up and deciding what your career might be.
Oh, yeah, sure. So I grew up in Miami, but not like the city of Miami, like Kendall, which is a suburb of Miami.
Okay.
Which is technically unincorporated Dade, but everyone just calls it Miami. So, yeah, I mean, when I was very little, I thought I was going to be a doctor. Because my godfather was a doctor, and his dad, who grew up a farmer in Cuba, he would call me doctor. So he was like proud of his son. He saw me and was like, he would call me doctor. He would call me doctor. So that's what I thought growing up. But that, you know, I realized pretty quickly that's not what I want to do. I want something a little more levity than being a doctor. And so I thought it was, for a while, it was going to be music.
Okay.
Yeah, I did piano for a long time. I was in a really crappy band in high school. And I went to FIU after graduation for computer science and piano performance.
I don't think I've heard that combo before. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, and in computer science, because I liked it. And piano performance, because that's what I actually thought I was going to do, and maybe some composing and stuff like that. And so I I was actually talking to my admissions rep at Full Sail about possibly doing the recording arts at Full Sail while I was going to FIU.
And at the same time? Or you meant like when you were done?
No, it was like, no, like switching up, possibly switching out, gotcha, out of going to FIU. Because it wasn't a very technical, it's not a very technical school when it comes to music. Pretty classic. Gotcha. And same thing, honestly, with the computer science, it was like a Java program. It was like for applications programmers, kind of the program that they had. But I realized I actually don't want to sit in front of a piano for 8 hours a day.
Mm.
But I realized that I could just naturally sit in front of a computer ed program like all the time. And that came really easy to me. It's like, oh, and I actually like it a lot. It's like solving puzzles. So this is something I could do. And so I also had a weird epiphany while at FIU, and I thought, like, wait a second, I like video games. I like video games a lot. And video games are made by programmers, and I'm actually a pretty decent programmer. Maybe I could do that. And it was always something like video games are like made by other. They're made by like some magical cloud in the sky. But it, like that, I had that realization, like, wait, I mean, I could do that probably. So I spoke to my admissions rep, shout out to Katrina, who's now my alumni rep at Full Sail. So I spoke to her like, hey, what about this game program that just opened up a bachelor degree? And she says, well, are you sure? There's a lot of math. And I said, yeah, I'll be fine. No, I'll be fine. And so, yeah, I joined in at the beginning of 2004, January 2004, Full Sail. And it was the first full bachelor class.
Okay.
So we called ourselves the beta bachelors because yes, we felt like we were beta testing that degree program.
You were. You were indeed. Yeah. Just like I was beta testing the original. So
yeah, that's right. That's right. But just to wrap up that origin story, years after I had graduated and gotten a job, I was working at Vicarious Visions. My mom had a friend come visit, and a really old friend, and I hadn't seen her since I was a small child. And she, you know, we were catching up, we were talking. She said, what do you do? And I told her I work for a video game company, and she stopped and she looks at me. She says, do you remember when I saw you last? I said, yeah. Do you remember I asked you what you want to do when you grow up, what you want to be when you grow up? I said, no, I don't. She says, you were this big. And she like held her hand around her waist. She said, it's like, you were this big and you said, I want to make games for the TV.
Really?
Yeah. I have no memory of that.
Huh.
So it all just kind of came full circle without like subconsciously. So I think it's just where I was meant to be, man.
That's really cool. And it's really cool that people remind us of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Because we definitely aren't, you know, like, especially when they're that young, we're definitely not going to remember that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. those are important moments. There's also times where, you know, my mom will tell me something like, you know, remember that time you said this? I'm like, no, like, I never knew I even believed that. Like, yeah, you know, there's some wild, you know, wild things that come out of childhood and, you know, our dreams and ambitions. Well, they line up, though. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Great.
And effortlessly too, because again, it wasn't something like strived for my whole life. It just kind of like, I feel like I fell into thinking I could do it and then just started doing it.
That's really cool. So yeah, when you were growing up, did you have a lot of video games? Like, is that something that was a part of your household?
Yeah. It started with my dad's PC, my dad's old DOS PC, and just kind of messing around with it. Actually, before that, it was an old Radio Shack with the cassette discs.
An old Tandy?
Forget the
It's like a similar TRS-80 Tandy, or something like that.
It was a TRS-80.
That was my first one.
Yep. And so basic, like making game, making like a banana throwing game in Basic that came preloaded on there. And our first like official console was the NES.
Mm.
So that was big in our house, the NES.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. So you guys didn't have an Atari. My first one was an Atari 2600. Otherwise, our stuff lines up.
Yeah. No, my aunt had an Atari, so I'd go to her house and play that.
Nice.
Pitfall. But yeah, the NES was the first big console that we really had. Other than that, it was a lot of PC games, like whatever we can get our hands on.
Yeah.
That wasn't the big PC games didn't really start coming out till later, and the whole shareware movement and all that stuff.
Yeah. That was a big one for me too. And I had that TRS-80, and then my first like real computer was a Tandy 1000, which was like the full on monitor with a 3.5 and a 5.25 disc drive. Like that was the
time.
That's
right. Yeah.
That's where I had played my first King's Quest game. I played King's Quest 4. That was where my love of adventure games started,
mm-hmm.
and that stays to this day.
Yeah, I think Space Quest 2 was my first adventure game.
Nice. And I love that stuff. Yeah. I miss those.
Yeah, good stuff.
The Ken and Roberta Williams are making a new game. I'm not sure if it came out yet, but it's at least on its way.
I heard about that. Because yeah. They kind of disappeared off the face of the planet for a while. And I was always like wondering, hey, what happened? Where'd they go? But yeah, it sounds like they were doing a Kickstarter, right?
Yeah. And I think it's close to being done, if I remember right.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, I got to check that out. Yeah, they were like big influences for me, you know, in my early... You know,
for
time
sure.
of game. So,
yeah, for
good
sure.
times. Yeah. So as you decided you were going to do Full Sail, you got there. What was your first couple of months like? Was it a bit of a shock for you, or like was it pretty easy for you?
I remember thinking. So I made the decision before going that day one of Full Sail is day one of my career. And that's the mentality I went into it with. So I thought, you know, I'm now at Full Sail, I'm a game dev. This is what I do now.
Yeah.
And that mentality really drove my whole career there at Full Sail. So there was some trepidation. Like I had a friend group that was all gamers, and I did not play the most games of my friends. So I kind of went in, you know, like a little nervous, like, oh, everyone here is going to know more about games and, you know, be better at games. And I'm still not good at games, but I do find myself to be a somewhat of a scholar, I guess, of game. I like the history of games, and I like the lore of games and game dev. When I found that getting to Full Sail, I can hold my own with everyone, and it was fine. It was an unfounded fear.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of those, especially in this industry.
Sure. Yeah.
So what were those first few months like as far as like, did you have any programming experience before when you're talking to the basic stuff,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
so you came
yeah,
in a little took, technical.
Yeah, I came out, I took programming computer science in high school, and then I took a couple years of computer science at FIU.
right
and so I kind of hit the ground running. I had a good feel for it. Now no one taught C++ like Arthur.
Yeah,
like that was
that
a unique
true.
experience, in a good way.
Yeah,
and so I feel like I really like was able to master the syntax there and like make it so that it wasn't about those 3 months was about not thinking about the language constructs and more thinking about the concepts.
Yeah. That totally makes sense. Yeah. Arthur was a very interesting, like imagine how many careers that dude kicked off. Like he was such a good intro to programming. I liked it so much. I took his class twice. So,
yeah,
but
yeah, I still think about that RPG that we made, like it was special.
Yeah, it was such a cool class and just a really good way to kind of like, it was a really good, identifier of like, am I going to like this or not? You know what I mean? Like when you're mm-hmm. in that class, you're like, this is what I'm going to do. Yeah. do I love this? And if you don't, it's time to rethink things.
It was also, I made an interesting observation there. I'm sure most people make the same observation, but really it comes down to, or what it seemed to come down to for me was, if you can grok pointers and indirection in that way, you're going to be fine. Yeah. And if you struggle with that, that those are the people who struggle consistently.
Yeah. Rowan in the chat saying that's he understands pointers because of him. So,
oh, nice.
That's funny. Yeah, I totally agree. And that's one of the more difficult early concepts to grasp. But he was really good at kind of making sure that you understood that. So that's good. Mm-hmm. That's cool. So what was the rest of your time like? Like, what at what point did you start thinking, I'm going to start looking for my first job? You know, or did you like, were you breezing through the curriculum and you're like, I'm good to go? Were you like, what was that overall experience like?
It was a lot of work. I don't know that I ever found it tough, except for, I think the machine learning class I found to be pretty tough.
Mm.
Engine was pretty tough. But like I said, this is my career now, so I just powered through everything.
Right.
That was my mentality. I go home and I'm working in class, I'm working in labs, I'm go home and work some more.
Yeah, it's like, and I had the same mentality when I was there. I was like, I gave up everything and moved to a place that I know no one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is what I do now, so I'm going to figure it out. And and that's I didn't realize I had the same mentality as you at that point, but in the end, that's kind of what it was. When I got there, I was like, this is just what I do now, so I'm going to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah. And I mean, I played games when I could, but honestly, thinking back, like what games I was playing during Full Sail, I think like everything that I played was like right after.
Yeah.
I can't think of, I think maybe The Sims X, I forgot which number came out at the time. Maybe I played a little bit of that. A buddy had an original Xbox, so a couple games came out of there. Maybe the Ratchet and Clank, because I never miss one of those. But other than that, I didn't really play that many games while I was at Full Sail.
I didn't either. It's hard for me, and for the first couple of years afterwards, it was really hard for me to like truly, like it was hard to turn off my developer eye. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I wasn't enjoying playing games for a while, and it took me 2 years, like. Two full years after it before I started to like really, and it was MMOs were the only thing that kind of like grasped me, you know, during that time and afterwards.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Came out. That's right. You just reminded me.
Yeah. Yeah. 2004, WoW was a big 2005. One. Yeah.
Yep. I did play a lot of WoW actually. but I was able to keep it manageable.
That's, did you work at all while you were in school?
So I was a lab specialist.
Okay.
Or lab monitor, not specialist, monitor, yeah. I think you called it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, which I kind of used to my advantage as well.
Nice.
I was a lab monitor during, well, it was a nice time to just sit there and focus and, you know, there's a whole like learning mentality that I didn't really realize until my wife taught it to me, which is, see one, do one, teach one.
Mm.
Have you heard about that?
Mm-mm.
So that's like a great method for really ingraining something in your memory is you see someone do something, you do it yourself, and then you teach someone how to do it. And so being a lab monitor was an opportunity to teach one, right? So people would come in and from PG1 with questions and I'd be able to just help them out. And we also during the midterm project, the first group project, I was a lab monitor, and I remember I had the late shift, and so I would lock up the lab at night and wait a couple minutes and then call up my team, say like, lab's open, guys. And we would work through the lab the whole night. And then, like, 20 minutes till 9, I was like, all right, let's get out of here. I gotta lock up for real. That's where we'd pull our all-nighters.
That's funny. Man, I did not do much of that. My all-nighters were, studying and trying to get projects done. Like, mm-hmm. But the one thing we did a lot of was we played D&D. And so we had a group that played throughout most of my time there. And so we would spend our weekends, you know, like the one real break that we would get, we would spend hours, you know, working through a D&D campaign. But at the time there wasn't a whole lot. Like, this was, 99, then mostly 2000. And then around the end, then I started getting to EverQuest near the end of that time that I was there.
Okay.
Yeah, it was.
You just reminded me. Did a bunch of Magic the Gathering during school as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, my brother had just gotten his first job, and it was decently paying.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started buying a bunch of booster boxes. That's what he did with his money. So he'd come down to visit, and we'd go to the cool stuff and do drafts and build decks and all that stuff. So I got pretty into it. One of the like maybe four or five times I've gotten deep into Magic.
So that's what I was gonna say. I've done it four or five times where I'll go deep and then I'm just done for a while. But right now I'm moving into a deep time because the Lord of the Rings expansion comes out next month. And
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is full on. I don't know if you've heard this, but there is a version of the One Ring that they're putting out that literally only one of them exists. And it's going to be, it's like the gold, like a golden ticket. It's going to be somewhere.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That is cool.
So now I'm like, well. So
someone may never see it. We may never see it.
It may take a while. That is true.
Yeah.
But man, I think we'll see it. And right now, they're talking right now, the card today, people are already offering over $100,000 for it. So like, there's open offers just on tables.
That's cool.
So it's like, but if there's one. Now, there's other versions of that card, right? But this is like the serialized one of one. Right. And it's only in particular types of packs. So I've got a couple of those boosters waiting and are supposedly heading this way. And we'll see how that goes. And could you imagine, though, pulling something like that?
That'd be amazing. Well, I mean, it's like I always imagine the Veruca Salts factory of workers. Oh, open up boxes. Exactly.
Yep, that's exactly right. Oh man. So yeah, but that happens to Magic all the time. And then I'll get bored after that until the Final Fantasy set comes out and I'll play that one. And then I'll be done again for a while. But anyway, back to gaming.
Yeah.
So at what point in your time at Full Sail, did you start job hunting? Like, were you like, I think I'm ready to start looking, that kind of vibe.
Pretty late. I was focused. I would say during engine class, I went to GDC.
Okay.
And that was a great experience to go as a student to like see what's out there. Really, really inspiring. And one of the interesting things was, I always took advantage of like when PAC members would come and try to get some FaceTime with them and absorb as much as possible. And one of the things that always struck me is how kind and welcoming they were. And I found the same thing to be the case at GDC.
Mm.
Almost every dev you come across is like wants to talk and share and like wants to bring people into the fold. It feels like an exclusive club, but like, all people need to do is ask and people are willing to give.
I'm glad you said that because that has been my experience as well. Yeah. And like, especially at something like a GDC, everybody's just like super open. They want to talk about whatever. They're usually excited about something they want to talk about as well. And like, I'd be introduced to people that I'm like, you've been making games for 30 years already. You made some stuff that I loved as a child, yet you want to talk to me about this thing that I'm working on. Like, it's just, mind-blowing how welcoming the whole industry is.
Yeah, for sure. You just reminded me of something, though. There was an assignment at Full Sail where we had to reach out to a developer and just ask a question. It didn't matter what it was. It was just like the exercise was go reach out to a real developer.
Okay.
And so I had my sight set on the designer of this game that I was, I don't know if obsessed is the right word, but like really in love with growing up. It's called Bloodmen.
Okay.
No one would ever know it. But it came out during the big like PC game flood of like 93, 94, like that era.
Yeah.
Where there's just like a million games on the shelf and no one played any of them. Or everyone just played Doom or something.
Demo discs, like that would come with the magazines.
No, but it was the big old big chunky box.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so the gameplay was really cool. It was kind of, they called it a cyberpunk gothic.
Okay.
So it was cyberpunk meets Dracula lore and like vampires and stuff. And it had a lot of really interesting design decisions. Like, it was partly an adventure game. It had some combat, a lot of dialogue trees. And you could surf the net. And what a thing was, like, you had a bloodlust meter that one of the first things you had to do is figure out how to keep that bloodlust meter low. Because if it would go up, you would just kill whoever's standing next to you, like an NPC.
Okay.
You would lose control and kill them. And they potentially are a quest giver that is required to beat the game. So it was possible to be in a situation where it was impossible to beat the game and not even know it because you accidentally killed them.
Oh, man. That's interesting.
So, yeah.
Wouldn't fly today, but yeah.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But I wanted to talk to the designer. Her name is Laura Cambo. And so I went on a quest to like find her and find her information. And eventually I found, somehow through searching and looking at credits and boxes and everything, was able to find the number of someone who's like a VP at Hasbro or something like that and called it. And it was a direct line to them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I remember calling and the reaction was not a good one.
Right.
It was like one of those, like, how did you get this number? Who are you and how did you get this number? and I realized, okay, I shot a little high on that one. So I reined it in and spoke to a more accessible dev.
Oh my gosh. Dude, it's funny. You can get some numbers like that if you really search.
Yeah, but if you really try, yeah. I tried.
Hey, what was the name of that game? Blood what?
Blood. You know, let me type it up in the Twitch stream here.
You're going to start a resurgence for this game. We're going to be trying to find it. Blood is Bloodnet. Okay. All right. Is that the game Halt and Catch Fire was based off of? Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know it was based off of a particular game. I loved Halt and Catch Fire. Oh, it's on Good Old Games. All right. Let's check that out.
Yeah. Everyone, let's give it the Jameson bump.
That's right. Let's go give it some love. I'm going to look that up and get it myself. I got to at least see what this game is that got you so interested. Oh, it's on Steam too. All right. From 93, man. 93.
Oh, look at that. I was right. 93.
That's wild. Ah, game nostalgia. It's one of my favorite parts of this. Like, it's one of my favorite parts of working in games because it's been such a part of our lives, our entire lives, right? So we get to literally talk about things that impacted us as a child and how it impacted us and how we want to recreate those experiences now. It's crazy.
Yeah. Talking to Raph Koster and Sam Lewis about Ultima Online is like one of the highlights of my life because so much of my life was sunk into that game.
Oh, man, that's great. I love it. So where did you first apply and when? Like, so you're getting near the end of your degree and you said you were a little late getting out there.
Yeah. So the first one, first of all, the guy who kind of orchestrated everything was Rob Coble. Mm-hmm. He's kind of legend.
Yeah, actually I just talked to him today and he's coming on next month. Or he's coming on in July. Awesome. In July. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So that's gonna be good.
Good. That's a good get. I love Rob. He said, here's what you gotta be doing. And I said, okay. And I interviewed with Infinity Ward, they came down and he set up an interview with them. And then I had, during Final Project, I had Stormfront Studios. Mm-hmm. RIP, Stormfront Studios.
Yeah.
They flew me out to, was it San Rafael?
Yep.
I think they were in. And that was intense. That was my first real interview. And it was 3 days.
What?
Yeah. So it was 2 full days on site. And then a third day of like, be in San Francisco and understand San Francisco.
Wow.
Yeah, they got me a car and a hotel downtown. And they said, like, figure it out. I said, wow. So yeah, it was intense. And it was kind of a trial by fire. I didn't get that job. I don't think I did well, but I'm so glad I had that experience.
That's a really cool experience. That's a wild interview, but also is a good way to kind of get a good feel both ways. You know, yep. Like you get a good feel for them, they get a good feel for you.
Absolutely. And you know, it probably came down to the fact that I was asking too much.
Yeah.
Because I'm a planner.
Yeah.
So I don't like to go and I think we had a little bit of this conversation before. I don't want to do something unless I'm doing it right.
Yep.
And so when they asked me, how much do you want to make? I did the math. I said, here's cost of living here. I did research. Here's the cost of living. Here's, I made a full budget and everything. Like I had everything planned out. And I said, if I'm working here, I probably want to make this much. And it was, I'm sure, more than they wanted to pay. So that's probably what it came down to.
It could be.
But you know, in other parts of the country, that number was way different.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's especially at that time was mm-hmm. one of the most expensive places to work, right? Like that yep. was where the expensive game devs were. What's really funny is, you probably interviewed with Sarah Stalker during that time, who she was like one of the creative directors there. And it is a good okay. friend of mine. It's like, she's one of my first industry contacts. We've known each cool. other like since I started yeah. in the industry in 2001. And so that's really fun for me, you know, to yeah, think yeah. about, you know, the fact that you probably did at least chat with her. That's cool.
And, you know, I was really excited about it too. Not only was it like new and adventures, and I actually had visited San Francisco a couple times and thought to myself, it would be cool to live here.
Yeah.
And they had some really cool stuff going on, and I like baseball. So, and they were a big baseball kind of culture at the studio. So it was exciting. I was bummed, but you know, it's all part of it.
It is. And you know, the funny thing about that kind of thing is because it didn't go well, doesn't mean you wouldn't eventually work there either. And that's a nice yeah. thing about this industry. Sometimes yep. if it goes well, it's just like, you know, maybe down the road it'll work out or something will open up that's a little more right at the time. So this industry is too small. Like if you'd gone there and pissed somebody off, that'd been a different story, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that didn't work out. And how close were you to graduation then? Or had you already graduated?
No, was it just before or just after we did the final project presentation? I don't remember. I think it was just after we did our presentation that okay. I flew out. And I remember because it was on my mind because during the final project presentation, one of the features that I worked on was a storefront. And I accidentally misspoke during the presentation and said Stormfront.
Oh, no.
I made this
Stormfront. See what's on your mind?
Stormfront.
That's funny. So how did you regroup? Did you come back and just like, you know what, that didn't work out, I'm going to hit something else? Or did you get a little bummed out about it? Like, what, do you remember kind of what those next couple weeks were like?
I don't remember feeling disappointed, but not like discouraged or anything like that. I just kept grinding.
Yeah.
My thought was like this again, this is what I do now. So even after graduation, I joined an open source project. I said, I'm going to do this until I was working on an open source math library while doing tests and all that stuff. I tested Insomniac. I tested
hear good things about that place.
It's all right.
Yeah.
No, Insomniac was one of my dream studios. I told you, Ratchet and Clank is likely my favorite game series.
That's like, awesome.
Period. Yeah. So eventually I did an interview up in Baltimore at a mobile studio.
Mm.
And interviewed at this place called Dynamic Animation Systems, which is like a military sim company. And they were hiring a lot of ex-Full Sailors. And I don't know if you remember Cyrus.
Oh, yeah.
Was working there.
Yeah. I talked to Cyrus and, not too long ago, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that was my first. That was my first real gig, was working there. And it was working on it's a really interesting product, military sim, where they had these fire lanes. They had these lanes with projectors and a modified M16 with joysticks on it. And so you're basically playing an FPS with what feels like a real M16,
which
is pretty cool. but also not so cool because it was meant to train soldiers to kill.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
And I had that realization while there. I'm like, you know, I'm actually not as comfortable with this idea as I thought. And, you know, their customers were like foreign governments, and which is, you know, a legit business, but not something that I personally was too keen on.
Sure. Yeah. We talk about that quite a bit on here, how the skill set and the tools and all those things are exactly the same. Right. And all the processes and everything mm-hmm. that you use yeah. are very, very similar. So it's a great experience. But the thing we don't talk about that much is what you're talking yeah. about right now, which is, intent. You know, there's the intent and, mm-hmm. you know, do I want to be involved in that kind of thing? It's tough for some people. I totally get that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought it was going to be fine until like reality kind of set in and I really thought about it. And I was like, no, not as a quote. But I mentioned I had interviewed with Infinity Ward while at Full Sail. That came back around, and I got a call from Vicarious Visions.
Oh.
Saying, we got your resume. You know, here are the notes we have. Do you want to come interview with us? And I said, yes, thank you.
Yes, I do.
and yeah, so I went up and interviewed there, which was, that interview was a bizarre experience.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever been to Albany?
No.
It's a kind of a post-industrial town.
Okay.
Like, it was really big. You could tell it was really big in the 1920s.
Yeah.
And really booming. And it's kind of like shrunk since then. And it's, I guess it's the focus of the city has changed since then. And so the building that Vicarious Visions had just moved into was an old train yard, like had an old, it was like an old shipping yard or something. It was next to the CDC, which is like this huge, gray, scary looking building. And this was an old like warehouse building, like shipping yard that had a train running through the building. And they were on the second floor, but the first floor was empty. And so as I'm walking by looking for this place that's unmarked because they had just moved in, they didn't have any signage yet. I'm looking through the windows and seeing, like, imagining the scene, like, where the mafia kidnaps someone and takes them to this warehouse that's empty and is, like, torturing them, trying to get information out of them. Like, that is really where I felt I was. They also flubbed a little bit and didn't exactly tell me when my start time was.
Yeah.
So most people showed up at the studio at 10 a.m. That was start time. And since I didn't know, I showed up at 7 a.m.
Whoa!
So it was very empty.
And, wow. All right, first of all, when have you ever done anything at 7 a.m.? Like,
I actually am an early riser. I usually have been.
I am too.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I'm the same way. I want to be up early. I want to get it going. Let's get the thing happening. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like game dev is not that way, right? Like when yep. I come in at 9, no one's showing up for at least an hour. You know, like it's that kind of vibe. But I'm up at 6:30, and like I want to get my day going.
Yep. I so but there was no one there. And like, so I kind of waited around. I realized, okay, there was a small sign outside of this door. And there happened to be someone who showed up like at 7:30. He's like, what are you doing here? I was like, I'm here for an interview.
Who are you?
Yeah. Come back at this time. I'll let them know that you were here. It's like, okay. So it all went well. It was a tough interview.
Did you leave and come back?
I left and come back. Yeah.
What did you do? Explored. What did you do? Like I
explored.
Yeah.
I drove around like seeing the town, really like beautiful area. Albany's actually amazing.
It's a good way to kind of see where you might be living, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And some parts are amazing and some parts are complete slums. I mean, like most places. But yeah, some of the places are absolutely beautiful there. I miss it a lot.
That's cool. Yeah, I've never been. Well, I hadn't been to New York at all until we went in April to New York City for my first time for my wife's birthday, which I loved. But I haven't been upstate New York like at all.
Yet. Yeah, it's way different.
Yeah.
Way different feel than New York City for sure.
Almost like contrast, right? Like there's a lot of like land and, you know, like industrial and like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like, and it's funny, when you drive down the VV was on Broadway, which is like a road that leads all the way through downtown, but also into the outskirts. And as you're driving down, it's all this kind of like, it's on the Hudson. And so there was a lot of shipping happening there and these big industrial buildings. And one building that famously, I don't know if they've knocked it down since I've been there, but famously like was completely condemned. And it's one of those where like, it costs more to destroy it and rebuild it than to just leave it there dead.
Especially if it has asbestos in it, you know, or something like that. Like, just leave it alone. Quarantine it.
There was the old RCA factory was out there, so there's a big dog with a Victrola on top of the building. It was kind of cool.
That's cool. So, first of all, I want to comment on, you said this one building had like a train that goes through it.
Mm-hmm.
That only happens when people don't want you to see what's getting loaded into that train, right? Like,
yeah.
But I also,
possibly.
I also want to back up a little bit. Like you talked about these different interviews and opportunities that you had, but what you didn't say was how you got those opportunities. So when you were doing this interviewing, were you making connections with people? Were you jumping online? Like how were you kind of like getting to this point?
Everything.
Yeah.
I used every resource I could. I had Rob Coble doing stuff for me, with me.
Yeah.
Everyone I knew I was calling up, you know, like I said, I had, you know, every, you know, PAC member and game dev person that had come to visit Full Sail, I'd try to, you know, try to follow up with. I had gone to GDC, so I had pulled a bunch of companies from there. And then I targeted the ones that I thought I would want to work for and did like cold calling and sending interviews and resumes and applications. Like Insomniac, and I wanted to work for Paradox and you know, a handful of other companies. And then the other huge resource at the time was Game Dev Map.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, here would be a cool place to live. Let me look at every company here. Every company in South Florida I called up. Not much at the time.
Man, you called like that. We didn't have LinkedIn back then, right? Like, we didn't have any way to connect with people
LinkedIn
like that.
LinkedIn was just starting up back then.
Yeah.
I mean, Facebook was just starting up back
then. Right.
Facebook was invite only back then.
That's wild. Like people today have no idea how hard it was. Like my first few jobs, literally I got from handshaking with people at GDC and getting business cards. You know, like that was, that was kind of how that happened for this industry for quite a while.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Yeah. And people don't even, business cards are now like a relic.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even have any like I never even thought to ask for any at Insomniac. Mm-hmm. Like what would I use it for? Okay.
Yeah, LinkedIn has a really nice feature now where you can scan a QR code. Oh. And everyone's using that now.
I didn't know that. That's good to know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll teach you how to use it. It's awesome.
Okay, absolutely.
It's a really great feature.
Yeah, no, that's great. I got to make a note of that. All right, so you got there, you did your interview. How did that go? Like, how was the interview itself?
I didn't know if it went well or not.
Yeah.
Specifically, a couple personalities there were really good about keeping it a secret. I had a feeling it went well, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
But it was an exciting time. I was excited. I did have a good feeling about it, but I didn't know for sure. But yeah, getting that call, I remember seeing the 518 call while I was at work and going outside and picking it up and that call changed my life.
I love that.
Yeah.
That call changed my life. Like that, those moments are just like so, so impactful. They feel so good. And you'll say that for the rest of your life. Right. Like that moment, you will never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I love that. So what was the role? Like, what were you going to do?
Oh, as a junior engineer, come in and do stuff. I didn't know what project I was going to be on. I didn't know anything. I wanted to make games. So I remember them asking me, would you be against working on this sort of thing and that sort of thing? The answer was like, absolutely not. I'm happy to work on My Little Pony or Doom.
Yeah.
Throw me on whatever. And which actually was, you know, in hindsight was a really good answer because VV was very into like Disney stuff.
Yep.
And like, you know, Pixar and DreamWorks. And at the same time, they also did work like on the Doom port. And so it was like,
it's real similar to where you are now, right? Like the kind of things that they would do is real similar to what you guys do.
Yeah, it was a very eclectic group of stuff, and that's we are now as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but my first gig was actually Marvel Ultimate Alliance for the Wii.
Man, I love those games.
It was what a great experience. And I had played X-Men Legends too, so it was awesome. And it was a Wii launch title, which is, again, amazing experience. Working on a launch title is not something you get to do very often.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Cause was it a launch title? Was it launched at the same time across all platforms?
I believe so.
But you guys were working specifically on the Wii version.
On the Wii and
that
PSP,
was going to launch. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We were the Wii/PSP SKU. And I believe the thinking behind that was you're going to have to down-res assets.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be good match. And the truth was it was not a good match. Like they were really two different ports. It was two different projects. And so I primarily did the Wii, even though we're all on the same team, I was primarily working on Wii and specifically the controllers, which is kind of like the new and different thing about the Wii anyway.
Sure was. Like that's I love the Wii controllers. Like I felt when it was done well, it felt felt really good. Like
really great. Yeah.
Like, to the point where I was like, is this what a controller is going to be like going forward?
Mm-hmm.
And, but man, and the Mario games, so good with those controls.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. But I mean, that's everything that Nintendo does, right?
Yeah.
It's like they find the way to make it the most crisp, perfect experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I think the flagship, sorry.
Yeah. So you're touching the Wii before anyone is, right? Like you're working on something that's going to come out with a console and or alongside the console. And you're at a point where, you know, this is also, was this Xbox? I'm trying to remember the lineup of what else was out there. Was this PS3 and 360 or was this, I'm trying to remember what lined up.
360. See, this is 2006, so I think 360 was just coming out.
Yep, that's right. It was just coming out.
Yeah.
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 Man.
So is that generation? I think that was the last Nintendo that actually kind of came out around the same time as the rest of the consoles, more or less.
Yeah, yep.
After that, they were kind of on their own cadence.
Yeah. Which is good. I'm glad they're on their own cadence. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't need to bother with what everyone else is doing.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about the Wii, right, was it's coming out at a little lower visual fidelity, like you talked about. Mm-hmm. So what kind of things did you struggle with as you were doing this? Because you got the controls, which are completely different. And then you've also got, you know, the graphic fidelity is going to be at least a little bit lower than what's on the 360 and comparable stuff.
Yeah. So the project itself, I don't know how much struggling. Now, my visibility wasn't super high at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it was actually struggling with performance. I'm sure it did. But like I said, we were working with the PSP SKU. So it had to work on that first.
That makes sense.
So we had a lot of those down-resed assets and you know, the rendering techniques that were developed for that on the were being used on the Wii. And the Wii was at the time basically a GameCube with more memory.
Yeah.
For the most part. Yep. Slightly faster, but really is a GameCube with more memory, effectively. Significantly more memory.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was like, you know, the performance trade-offs were about like utilizing memory more than CPU if possible.
Yeah.
But the challenges really were around that, especially for me, around the input API and coming up with an algorithm that would detect the accelerometers as what we wanted them to be.
Yeah.
And then from a design challenge, it was like teaching people how to use this.
Yeah.
Right. And also, like, the game is a known quantity. The X-Men Legends had been out for years. So MUO was just an extension of that game. And that's a solidly gamepad game.
Yeah.
So doing a gamepad game on Wiimotes also was not kind of super intuitive. So figuring out, like, where the right line is, the buttons are in different places. And so those were the big challenges, I think.
I love that you said MUA, because as developers, we have nicknames and acronyms for everything, right? Like, I love that.
Yeah.
But so someone asked in the chat to ask you about the lasso move for Spider-Man.
Oh, geez. Oh, Roman. yeah, the lasso move. So that was one that I came up with just kind of after hours. Because we were doing one of the things about MUO was each character had a unique set of skills and abilities, and so when we could, we would try to find opportunities to use the Wiimote, but it wasn't really in the schedule to do anything special there. So, but I realized when Spider-Man, one of his moves he would grab someone with his web and then spin around,
right?
And you can, you know, in the game, you're kind of tapping the X button or whatever it was, and when you stop tapping, he lets him go and flings him against the wall.
Okay.
And so I did that, but with lassoing with the Wiimote.
Really? That's cool.
So I implemented that after hours, and it was kind of, they told me not to.
They told you not to, or they didn't encourage you doing it?
No, they told me not to. They said, we don't have time for that. Don't waste your time. We are like we're crunching this and that, and like, well, I did it anyway. And eventually, like when I felt like it was decent and like it felt safe, I went to my lead and showed him. I was like, here, check this. Actually, I think I went to the lead designer first. I was like, check this out. And he's like, oh. And then I went to my lead engineer. I was like, check this out. He's like, let me see it. And so he did a quick code review. I was like, okay, fine. So we went to the producer and like, what do you think? Like it turned into a whole thing.
Yeah.
But eventually got it.
Nice.
And I think it made the game better. It was really fun. And so I think there was a couple other opportunities where we were able to find easy wins like that after that point.
That's really cool. I like it. Yeah, grown up, look what I made in the chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
Well, I mean, that's something I think see a lot in games is when someone goes off on a little squirrel adventure and you don't want to make a big deal out of it, but you kind of do one of these like, hey, check this out really quick. Tell me what you think.
Yeah. Yep.
And a lot, you, I think a lot of really, a lot of magic comes from those moments in games and game development.
Man, I completely agree. And like that stuff happens, when that stuff happens, sometimes it can be a little irritating, right? Because mm-hmm. we're like, you know what? We're trying to do the things we've set out to do.
Planned.
Yeah. And this is time that was not spent doing that thing. But when you look at it was done because someone was passionate about it and they feel like it was good for the game. It's not always true, but the moments that they do something like that and we look at it, we're like, you know what? This does make we need to do this. Like that's a proof enough that this thing needs to happen. Like that's a big win for everyone, right?
Yep.
I love that. So talk to me a little bit about specifically, like we just talked about this scenario, but talk about the view from associate game programmer, right? Like you come mm-hmm. in as bottom of the rung, right? Like you're not making big decisions, right? You're probably handed very specific things that probably already have a direction and a very specific, maybe even a blueprint for how it needs to be created. And mm-hmm. you're implementing these things. What was that first few months like for you as you were like finding your place?
It was pretty scary.
Yeah.
Like it was one of those, and I didn't even feel this at Dynamic Animation Systems, but I felt like, oh, this is the big leagues now. So I did feel a lot of pressure, and my first check-in broke the build, which was devastating. And you know, I was devastated. Everyone else was like, don't do it again. Here's how you test so that it doesn't happen again. I was like, okay.
That might be my favorite line from you of all my first check-in broke the build. Like oh, that's a nightmare scenario for a new employee. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was like, it was simple. I wrote we code and didn't wrap it in if we. Or if revolution at that point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That'll do it. That'll do it.
Yeah. So,
oh, man.
But yeah, I mean, I was given a bug database and going in and spoke to... There was an engineer heading up the input design at the time. VV was a very engineering heavy company. So yeah, I was an engineer heading up the design at the time, and he was kind of hybrid as well, kind of a technical designer before that was really a thing.
Yeah.
Kind of very technical designer. And he would throw me stuff over the fence to go in and plug in. And so there was some UI work involved. There was some, and that just like, yeah, figure out how input works and then swap it out for this stuff. And so he gave me an API that was like, here is what, you know, here is how we detect in a controller shake.
Okay.
And so I had to go and swap out any situation that was like a punch, make it work for a punch or a controller shake. And here's a controller thrust. And here, swap out any dash with thrust or the B button. Or like, it was that sort of thing. And then I was always just trying to find opportunities, like I said before, to make the game better, because that's what we're doing, right? We're making awesome games, so let's make an awesome game.
That's the goal. That is true. Man, I love that. So we're a little over halfway through our time here.
And I'm on my first official title.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, dude, you're going to have to come back on. Like there's like, don't even worry about that. But this is where I like to break and do what I call the dev round. This is a series of questions I ask everybody. And so I'm curious to hear your answers.
All right, let's do it.
All right. First question. What's your favorite game of all time and why?
We can't do that.
I can.
Because I guess you just did. There's too many.
Yeah.
I mean, the first one that usually comes to my head is Ultima Online.
Okay.
It's not a game I can play right now or anymore.
I think that's okay, right? Like to me it's like what's the game in my head that I'm like is my favorite game?
Yeah, that's up there. I would say my favorite series for sure is Ratchet and Clank.
Okay.
Right? I'm never gonna miss a Ratchet and Clank, and there's been no Ratchet and Clank that has disappointed or has failed to delight me in
Yeah,
every way possible.
that's fair.
But as far as like an individual experience, there has been none more impactful and important than Ultima Online.
And why is that?
Aside from the fact that I just loved playing it and all the emergent systems, like just the beauty and all of the emergent systems in that game was, unparalleled. But aside from that, I had so many experiences that made you feel real feelings.
Okay.
And I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example. There was a time when I was playing, me and my friends had a boat that we bought together. Very expensive, very difficult to get gold in that game for that's a whole like entire subject on the economy of Ultima Online. But it was very difficult to get gold in that game. So when you did get enough gold to buy things that cost gold, like a boat, it was really important. And my friends and I shared it. We each had a key. We filled it all up with all of our armor and everything. And I was out with the boat one day,
Oh
adventuring, leveling up,
no.
and befriended a guy who we were fighting together. And in the middle of the fight, my armor breaks. And I said, "Oh, I gotta go restock real quick. I'll be back." And I leave, and I come back with a fresh suit of armor. He says, "Hey, where'd you get that armor?" I said, "Oh, I just have my, over there." I was not specific, but he kind of figured what happened, and he called over his red friend,
Oh
which,
no.
red in Ultima Online, your name, if your name tag was red, it means you're a murderer, and the guy completely destroyed me, looted my body, took the key, and absconded with the boat that belonged to myself and all of my friends, and we had spent probably collectively hundreds and hundreds of hours.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, there's Mike Noah talking about the boat. Yeah, so it was devastating, and it was an actual like emotional and physiological response.
Yeah, it's
Like,
real, right? Like
yeah, it was real. And it took a
it.
while, but after a while, I was like, wait a second. This is a video game. But what I, and it was fake. It's a fake boat. It's just digital stuff. But I had that realization, like, what I felt was real.
Absolutely, it is. Like that
And,
hundreds of hours you put in were not fake, right?
oh, yeah.
Like,
No, for real. And so it was from that moment that I thought, I want to make a game that makes someone feel that. And if not that, something. Make them feel something real.
yeah, man, I love that.
Yeah. So aside from that specific, like the stories that come out of that game are just so amazing in every way possible. And the rush of being a thief in that game is like unlike no other.
That's the class I play in every game that I can. So I'm curious. I've never played Ultima Online, actually. Is it still playable? Like, is it still out there?
I don't know. I don't know.
Hmm.
It's definitely not the same game it was back
Yeah.
then. This is like 96, 97, 98, when the game was not friendly. They started making changes to make it not so awful for newcomers.
Okay.
And that kind of situation, like me losing the boat, was not just devastating to me, but happened to people every single day, and it made people not want to play. So they
Yeah.
started making changes to make it more friendly.
Yeah, that happens. I get that. Interesting. But then it killed your joy.
What's that?
Then it killed your joy. Like,
It did, but it was a it was like a lapse in joy, let's call it.
Yeah, right.
Now I get joy from the story of it.
Oh man, I see these kind of stories are my favorite stories from games, and they happen in MMOs and open world games and that kind of stuff these days. And the more, but every time I hear a story like that, I feel it. Like I feel along with you. I feel for you because I know what that was like. Man, it's brutal.
Had a actually recently had an experience like that when in Valheim.
Oh yeah,
where we all went out adventuring on a boat to nowhere in specific and died, and all our stuff was out there.
Oh.
And so we went out on another adventure to get our stuff back, and died again. And so. So we had a few of those, and I think everything just ended up staying out there, like we couldn't get it back.
Man. Ugh, that's brutal. But
that's the fun of that stuff.
That's brutal. All right, you ready for the next question?
Yeah, let's do it.
When did you first feel like you had made it in game development?
Made it. Okay, so there's one specific moment that stands out. And it goes back to that make people feel something. We had released Guitar Hero for the Wii. And I was super proud of that game. Guitar Hero was at the time when like one of my favorite things. And I got to work on it. And I was at the mall there at Albany. And there was a Best Buy on the second floor of the mall, and right outside of the Best Buy is an escalator that comes down and a little like place for food at the bottom of the escalator. And I was sitting eating and I look up and there is a kid, maybe 10, 11, 12 years old with the big guitar, white Guitar Hero box.
Yep. I know that box.
White meant it was Wii.
Yep.
Right. And it was under his arm and he was coming down the escalator and he had the biggest smile on his face.
Oh, I love it.
And I was like, I helped do that.
Man, that's, isn't that great?
Yes.
Like seeing somebody that excited about something you worked on. And you know what that feels like because you've bought a game and you felt that same thing probably at least a dozen times.
I felt the same thing buying the first Guitar Hero, actually.
Yeah.
I remember leaving GameStop with the big box under my arm, thinking like, oh, this is going to be amazing.
I love that. See, that now, so here I'm thinking now, like we got Spider-Man 2 coming out this year, and I want that, right? But So I'm probably going to go find a GameStop or something.
creep around.
Who's a creepy old guy in the corner? I don't know. He's just watching people buy his game, smiling in the corner. I don't know.
So I'm not gonna lie. I did that a little bit at GameStop too, when Guitar Hero came out, I went in and they had the display up, and I was, oh, can I try that out? And it had just come out.
Nice.
Like, yeah, sure.
You're just killing it. Yeah.
And I ripped one out and they're like, whoa. And I was like, oh, it's a good game. And I just,
hey, what's this game? Could I give it a first try? Like, that's funny. Oh man, I love it. See, now we just get people on the internet shitting on our games. So it's like, all right. What's your passion in game development? What do you care about the most?
That changes over time.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no one answer to that. That changes over time. For a while, it was honing in on that player experience, like making sure the player has the best experience possible. There was a time where it was, I want to make beautiful systems.
Mm.
Like, I want to make something that under the hood, no one would know, but is kind of like holding everything together. So that was more about like my personal challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And lately it's been about culture and dev culture.
Yeah.
and really making an environment where people are happy to be and happy to be working on stuff and just really enjoying the process.
My journey was a bit similar. Yeah, like the culture is definitely the thing I care a lot about now. Culture and work-life balance. Like those are kind of my two things that I care a lot about. But yeah, it changes a lot, especially over careers as long as ours, where we've seen a lot, we've done a lot, we've been through some shit, you know, and I think, like you said, things like culture become definitely more important as you've been doing this longer, and you see it can be better than this, right? Like we can do better, and that's good. I like that. Do you feel like, just as a side question, that you're in a place where you can impact that properly the way you want to?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah,
that's good. That's a real fulfilling. Like there's a lot of times we want to make culture better, but we don't have an avenue to do it.
Yeah, we have a really good team, and I try to do right by everyone on the team, and it helps to be a partner at the company.
Yeah.
So when there's a problem, we try to foster a culture of feedback. I tell everyone, if you have something's wrong, let us know.
Yeah.
If something doesn't pass the sniff test, let us know. If something doesn't feel right, let us know. If you don't feel comfortable telling me, tell my other partner, tell your lead, tell someone. Yeah. Let's do something about fixing issues.
Yeah.
And that's across the board, we try to be like that. And so when something like that does come across my plate, we do what we can to fix it. And sometimes there is no fix, unfortunately.
At least not an easy one. Yeah.
Yeah, at least not an easy one. Sometimes the answer is like, grin and bear it for two more months and I'll get you out.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's tough because it's also a business, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's also the difference between things that are like systemic problems and things that are, temporary problems. Sometimes we are presented with situations that aren't what we would like, but they are temporary. And we will come together. Yep. We'll figure them out. We'll get through them as best we can. But it's not a tell or a recurring thing that's going to happen, right? If it happens again, then we know it's a problem. It's something that, like there's something that's causing it. We need to look back and address, more deeply.
Yep.
That's good, though. I like that. I'm glad you're feeling good about that. All right. What advice would you give to someone who's looking for their first job in the industry today?
I'm going to give you the answer that I'm sure everyone gives you. Network. It's just talk to people. So one of the things that I try to live by is be kind and work hard.
Mm.
I forgot where I heard it. I know it was a TV show.
It's yours now.
Which TV show? Yeah, right. I can't take credit because some character said it on a TV show, and I don't remember which one it is. But he said, "Be kind, work hard, and everything is going to work out." And that it stuck with me because it really resonated. Because that's kind of how I feel like I've been. I work is be kind and work hard. Everything just kind of works from there. And so, if you can. Let's zoom out a little bit and not say that. Let's say choose your values and stick by them.
Hmm.
And if you want to get that job, you should still stick to your values. Make them realistic, right? But stick to your values and then just meet as many people as possible. There's so many resources out there between LinkedIn and the internet and like, all the old school stuff that we used to do is still out there too.
Yep.
You could still pull up credits and you just have more resources to look up those names now.
Yeah. Yeah. My biggest piece of advice these days is to leverage LinkedIn in a specific way. Like, and I always tell this to full sell students because it's an easy way to kind of approach it, which is LinkedIn lets you search for people at a company and that have full, that went to full sale, right? So you can search those two things together, and now you've got someone at a company that has a similar background to you.
Shared experience, yep.
And it's probably going to be cool with you reaching out and at least asking some questions, you know? Yeah. And that's a really good way to find out just some information about a place.
Here's another thing that I do. Is if I play a game that really impacts me or resonates with me or anything like that, is I'll stay for the credits because I want to see who like these things are not made in the clouds like I thought, like I used to think. Yeah. These are made by people.
Real
people.
So I want to
know who are those people? And number one, I also like to see is like, oh, do I have any friends on this team that I didn't realize?
Yep.
But aside from that, like if there's a specific thing about the game that really stuck with me, I will try to find the person who might be responsible for it and reach out and just tell them.
Nice.
I got really, really recently, I got into, like in the past few years, into Sea of Thieves. That's another game that I think from a design perspective is absolutely beautiful of a game.
I'm learning a lot about you. As we were talking earlier, I thought of Sea of Thieves. And like I wondered if that's something you would like. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's emergent systems, right?
Yeah.
So I went and looked up devs and number five, Jesus. Hooked up with them on LinkedIn and just told them this game's amazing. Here's what I love about it. Keep it up. Period. That's it. Now we're connected on LinkedIn. If there's a new update I'm excited about, I'll just tell them, and they'll usually respond saying thank you for the feedback or whatever. And that may turn into something. Maybe it won't. It doesn't really matter. That's not the point.
I'm glad you said that because the thing that I really try to drive home with people is when you're making connections, if you're in it to get something, we can feel it. Like we can sense it.
Yeah.
We know that you're out here just trying to get something from us, but if you're trying to just make a connection, right? And just literally like, I want to have a conversation. I want to just get to know you. I want to hear like, and it feels natural. You're going to get way more out of that in the long run than you are just trying to like make connections because I want something from someone.
Yeah. And you're 100% right about that. I will also recognize that in being in the position, having been in the position of a student who is trying to do that, there is this underlying understanding that like I need a job.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And so, and there's nerves behind that. And there's like, I want to do this because you're supposed to do it. And I don't want to ask for anything, but I also really do need something.
Yep.
And it's an uncomfortable position.
It is. It is.
And my advice to people in those uncomfortable position is be uncomfortable. Do it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And like you're like, I'm not suggesting not to do it. Right. And the truth is you're probably going to come across in not the best light some of those times, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But what I want people to be thinking about is like, all you're really trying to do is make a new friend. And if you frame it around trying to just connect with someone, a lot of that, like that nervousness and stuff can kind of fall away because now you're just like, I'm not coming to you for something, even though that I am. Right. And there's hope there. Like if you can frame it and get your own mind wrapped around the fact that like, you're just trying to make a connection that someday might be fruitful in some way. Mm-hmm. At the very least, you kind of take the pressure off yourself a little bit. And you make it feel like it's more of a natural connection. And I think those in the long run will get you a better place. But you're right. Those people are generally coming because they need a job. They want a job. They're trying to get into this industry. And they know that you can help them do that.
Yep.
It's a tough spot. It is a tough spot.
Yeah. Right. I recently had a student come to me. And it was kind of the same thing where, you know, I know he needs a job. But he's talking, but you know what? He's holding a conversation that has nothing to do with getting a job. But yeah. I know what he wants. I know what he needs. And, you know, I'll try if I can. But in the end, he ended up getting another position because he was probably doing the same thing with other companies.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And they had an immediate opening and he took it and I congratulated him and now we know each other.
Yep.
And now I have a new connection in the industry and he has a connection in the industry too.
That's just it. Like it's almost 100% assured one of you is going to need an opportunity down the road. Right. Yep. And now you've got someone that you can reach out to say, hey, is there anything? Do you know of anything? Like, could you give me some feedback on this? Like, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. That's one of my favorite and least favorite things of this industry, right? Like it can be really great, but it can also be a little time consuming for us at times, you know, and I'm not able to give people the amount of time that I would like to, you know, in those cases. So sometimes I have to be, you know, a little more brief with my responses and things like that. Or I don't get back to people for a couple of weeks because I really didn't have the time to sit down and kind of have a conversation.
Yeah.
But we do what we can. Are you ready for the next one?
Let's do it.
This is my favorite one. Do you know Kim Alpert? Hall of Famer Kim Alpert. This question came from her. And this is my favorite question. It said, if you were born in the year 1870, what do you think you would be doing? Career-wise.
The year 1870.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm born in the year 1870. Civil War ended a couple of years ago, right?
like 1860-ish? Late 1860s? Yeah.
Late 1860s. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's expansion out west.
There's not much electricity, right?
Much electricity. People are communicating through telegraph.
Right.
So likely something pretty localized.
Probably, yeah.
Unless
you want to work on the railroads.
Yeah. There's still a lot of making happening. So maybe some sort of smith.
What do you want to make? What do you think you would be the most interested in making? We're talking like metalworking or
something functional.
Yeah.
Smithing horseshoes.
Okay.
And wheel wagons. Wagon wheels.
I mean this sounds like a tools developer, you know, or someone
right?
that
Maybe working with wood. I like working with wood now.
Yeah.
So maybe that would strike me in those days as well. Let's see. What else? I still like levity.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. So maybe something in the, maybe I'll be working in vaudeville.
Interesting.
Developing vaudeville acts or something.
Interesting. All right.
Playing ragtime piano.
Huh. Interesting. All right.
So, but you know, this at this point though, by the time I'm career age, it would start becoming like turn of the century.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I'm my age back then, we would be approaching World War One.
Yeah.
Yeah, so sorry, this is like a cool question.
I love this question.
Because
you can go so many ways with it, right? Like you can approach it as like, okay, well, if I'm just going to be like in my small town, how would I approach helping a small town, right? Or what's the technology? My first thought is what's the technology level? I think I usually answer this question somewhere along the lines of I feel like I would probably be in like building of things, like constructing things. I like to I'm not an architect. I'm not a precision person, but I could totally see myself contributing to that kind of thing in some way. But I think I love magic and illusions a lot. And I think that simple things could blow people's minds in that time frame. So I feel like there's a decent chance I would be some kind of an illusionist then.
Yeah.
Which would be a lot of fun.
Be hanging out with, well, what was that movie with Tesla? And
So there's The Prestige?
The Prestige, that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah.
That movie's wild. I love that movie.
Yeah, crazy.
I recently rewatched that on an airplane, just like in the last couple of years. And it does. It's still a really good movie. But there was a second one that came at that time with Ed Norton, too. That was another.
That was The Illusionist.
Yeah, yeah. Those two together, like that was like very, very impactful couple of movies for me.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. All right, I got a bit of an adjacent question to that. What if you were born in 2077?
Ooh, 2077. This is our cyberpunk future, right?
Sure is.
So, all right. So, I feel like we are going to be heading into biotech is going to become really big. So I do believe in the cyberpunk future.
Yeah.
I mean, we're kind of already there. It doesn't look like the way we think it looks, but we are already like my dad's a cyborg. He's got a cochlear implant.
Right.
So he literally has a computer that talks to his brain.
Wow.
So,
that's wild.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Like we're literally already there. Like we have the baseline for this kind of stuff. Already.
Yeah, for sure. So it's only going to get more and better.
It's our idiocracy era. It's true. We are.
Yeah.
Talk about a prophetic movie.
It is kind of sad. So this is 50 years in the future. I do also believe there is going to be a separate layers of reality, like separate metaverses, that are going to cater to their own niche. I don't think it's going to be like a Ready Player One where it's like there's one that everyone is part of. I think there's going to be a lot of them. And in fact, there might be one like per industry. I don't know. That one's hard for me. Programming is a different sport in the future.
Oh,
it's a different craft.
Yeah. especially,
but there's
like 50 years from now ish. Like that's well, as much as technology, you know, doubles and you know every decade or so.
It's also a hard question to answer because like the artificial intelligence landscape is changing things on a weekly basis right now.
It very, very much so. Yeah.
So I'm just going to go and say I'm going to be making wagon wheels and horseshoes.
You know, there could be an apocalypse by then, right? Like we might have to revert back to.
That's right.
All right. Last question. Who would you suggest I ask to come on the show next?
I think you should talk to Roman.
Yeah.
Mr. Roman EXX1 in the chat. I think he'd be awesome on this show.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good suggestion.
Yeah. Shout out to Roman, dev at 2K right now.
Okay.
Also went to high school with him.
That's crazy. Like,
yes.
Ain't nobody from my high school making games. I'm just saying. Like,
well, what even makes it more crazy is our graduating class was like 100.
Yeah.
100 people. And that's a 2% hit rate on game devs.
Roman just said, holy shit, I didn't think he liked me. He didn't say he liked you. He said you'd be good for the show. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's true.
I love it. All right. So we got about 10 more minutes before we hit time. So I don't think it's great for us to like, you know, jump into a whole new topic. So
sure.
Is there anything on your mind that you wanted to, that you had in mind to talk about tonight that you were like, oh, I want to make sure we talk about this or that, or is just anything on your mind in general?
You know what? One thing. So two were talking about like inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And Ultima Online is one of those games that changed my life.
Yeah.
There's one more game that changed my life. And that was, excuse me, the 2018 God of War.
Oh, yeah.
Absolute masterpiece.
Why did that change your life, though? What stuck out?
I was working at Magic Leap at the time. Magic Leap was crazy, crazy company. Some of the best times in my career were at Magic Leap, and some of the worst times in my career at Magic Leap.
I can't wait to talk more about that, by the way, when we get there next time.
Yeah, that one's gonna be interesting because I don't know how much I could share.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, but I mean, regardless, a crazy, crazy experience. But we were working on, you know, emerging tech, augmented reality or extended reality or spatial computing, whatever they like to call it at the time. And so a lot of the work I had done was about like really understanding that problem space and that design space and some of the technical challenges that came along with it and working on, you know, my job had become navigating the Magic Leap ecosystem.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean both company, like both the, you know, the OS ecosystem, and hardware ecosystem, but also the culture of the company itself. And yeah, that became like one of my main jobs. It's really like just getting things done despite the challenges, logistic challenges, things like that. And so I'd gotten a little bit separated from actual game dev.
Mm.
Sorry.
Kidding. You're good. You're doing a lot of talking, man. I get it.
And in 2018, we shipped the headset. We shipped a couple experiences on it. Really, really proud of what we did. Shout out to Create and Tanandi, Project Create and Tanandi.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. G, Invader, Dr. Gorbort's Invaders. All amazing, amazing experiences. If anyone could ever get their hands on a Magic Leap 1 at this point. But I kind of lost sight of the game dev, like traditional game dev for a while. And when I played God of War, it reminded me of all the reasons why I got into game dev, which was, it was an emotional experience. The combat was crisp. The set pieces told a story. The voice acting and the writing was top notch. The narrative was second to none. There was nothing about that game that wasn't top of its class. And that was one of those games where I sat there during the credits, just like, that was a whole other thing.
Yeah.
And I reached out to everyone that I knew on the project and some people that I didn't, and, you know, expressed how I felt about everything. And it was after playing that I realized I got to get back into making, you know, games,
okay,
not just
technology,
emerging tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I love that. Like that's I've gone through a couple of those kind of moments in my career as well. And that honestly, the same for me happened when I was at Full Sail, you know, I went there to teach and kind of do side projects and that kind of thing. But at one point I was like, you know what? I miss doing, like really doing this, you know, and it being the thing that I spend my entire day being a part of, which is why I came back, you know, and joined Insomniac. Mm-hmm. So I totally get that. And it can be really impactful too, when you've mm-hmm. been doing this as long as you have, and you kind of get to that moment where you're like, I'm not doing exactly what I want to be doing.
Yep.
I need to make that move, as scary or as much of a change as it might be. I know that it's the right thing for me to do to kind of make this move over into something else.
Yeah. And it was also scary because it was going from, you know, it was a tech startup, but you know, it was a well-funded tech startup. And I was going into an actual startup, an unfunded actual startup with Ghost Punch.
Yeah.
So there was definitely some risk involved, and you know, but I was putting my career in my own hands, and you know, I knew the partners, and
mitigated risk, right?
Yeah, I understood the business enough to know that we could make it work, and I trusted myself to help be able to make it work.
Well, that's another big part of it, right? Is understanding. No, it's hard for us as individuals to truly understand what we're capable of, right? Or at least it can be. It is for me. And so like there's times where I'll like, you know, have conversations where I'll be looking at opportunity and I'm not entirely sure if I'm fully capable of doing what I would want to do in that role, but also just understanding, you know, that is it really what I want to be doing? And like, so there's a lot of that kind of conversation and thoughts that we go through anytime we're thinking about making a move, you know, career wise in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's I'm really, there's so much of your career that I can't wait to talk about because we've barely scratched the surface. So,
oh yeah.
When we get done here, you and I will talk about another time for you to jump back on and join us and talk more. Sure. But if people would like to reach out to you, say hello, make a connection, how would you prefer that they do that?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn's the best.
Yeah. I agree with that. That's where I tend to send people as well. All right, guys, you see the name. You know how to find him on LinkedIn. Go do that thing. But for now, man, I want to jump off here and say my goodbyes, and you and I will find some time for you to come back on. This has been great, and I can't wait to do it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
It's going to be at least one more time, maybe two more. So prepare yourself. But seriously though, I'm really glad we finally got around to doing this. And
absolutely. Yeah, it was a long time coming.
Yeah. I can't wait to do it again, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate
you, buddy. Later.
See you, man.
Hey, thanks for watching. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications below so you'll know when new episodes are ready. If you're interested in the audio version of the podcast, I've got links for that in the show notes for you. And if you want to join us live and get your own questions answered, we're at twitch.tv/JamesonDorral every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Have a good week, and we'll see you soon. So, man, it's been a while since... It's been like at least a year since you've been on here. And,
Is that true?
I think so. Like, I think so. I'd have to look back for sure. But it's been a while.
It's all a blur, man.
That's also true. I still feel like 2020 has been the longest 3 years of my life. Like it feels like it's still 2020 and that nothing has changed, but working from home will do that to you, I think.
Yep.
So what's new? What's been going like now you're currently lead designer at Paddle Creek Games. I don't know if you heard me say earlier, I keep wanting to type Paddlefish every time. And I don't even know why. I don't know what that is. Like, it's just what's in my head for some reason.
There's Chucklefish.
Yeah, that's true.